A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 255. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Cruise of the Gods. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are in 2002, December 2002 to be precise, with the BBC and a 90-minute comedy special, which was a show about a show. It's about a failed actor forced to relive his brief moment of fame on what we have to confess looks like a truly terrible early 1980s science fiction television show, as he's on board a fan cruise with the fan club. So there's lots of various humorous aspects, and as we've said last time, Brian, some sort of metatextual stuff going on, actors playing roles.
Yes, absolutely. So in a little more detail on the story of Cruise of the Gods, the fan cruise for these devotees, these serious fans of the Children of Castor continues. And Andy Van Allen has to endure these Q&A sessions and lectures analyzing the scripts and continuity errors in great detail, and these various odd games and things they have going as well.
Yes. Now, you know, Brian, you and I have been to conventions together. We've sat in some lectures and some Q&A sessions. Hopefully, I don't think we've ever sat in any quite so obsessively geeky as portrayed on this cruise. With David Walliams, I think, in particular, with his analysis of the Children of Castor as the president of the fan club, really taking it to some extreme lengths.
Yeah, there are people who get into depth on things, but many of the portrayals we have are based more in stereotype than in anything you're likely to see.
Yeah, hopefully, anyway.
Meanwhile, the fan club organizers are trying to persuade Andy Van Allen to put on his original costume, which, of course, they've managed to procure.
Yes, he has the costume, or rather, it's in his room, the costume and the wig, the terrible mulleted wig. But, of course, he doesn't want to put these terrible clothes on. And there are a few comments from the fan club about, you know, previous cruises and previous actors who would put on the costume. And yeah, Andy Van Allen doesn't really want to be judged by his performance in The Children of Castor, but there he is, stuck on this cruise with the fans and resisting desperately their urgings for him to don the costume. And while he's doing this, he's also bumping up against the fame that he so desires. So last time we mentioned he ran into Jack Jones, the singer, who's also on board the cruise. But once they're ashore on one of their sort of going ashore moments off the boat, he quite literally bumps into who else but the more successful Nick Lee, played by Steve Coogan. And Nick Lee played Damsar in the Children of Castor show, but of course has now gone on to much bigger and possibly better things because he's a successful star on American television in another show that looks rather dire to me, Brian, but Sherlock Holmes in Miami. It certainly made him a big name, and he has all the trappings of success.
Yes, that's right. And they did some amusing things with showing the little bits of Sherlock Holmes in Miami. Nick Lee is much happier and keen to take part in all of the fun and games on the cruise. And he sort of joins in as this surprise to all of the fans and is having dinner at the captain's table. And he has a beautiful girlfriend there. so on and so forth. You know, he's living the life. And Andy's embarrassment continues, and we begin to learn more about one of the members of the fan club as well.
Yes, you know, they in the first part of the show, the fan club more or less ciphers as just, you know, the obsessive, geeky fans. But we do, their characters do develop in the second part. And I think it's in part due to the enthusiastic presence of Steve Coogan playing Nick Lee and his evident enjoyment at being part of this cruise. He's having a great time. He just loves it.
That's right. And when we start getting into some of these things, there is a bit more of a character drama between these various characters that starts to play out, which adds something a little more to it rather than just having the comedy we were starting out with.
Yes, it changes it. And, you know, we learn more about Andy and he finds out more about himself, and there's a chance of, well, some sort of ending and resolution for him, you know, that he might be able to move on from his failures as an actor. And who knows? Better things, maybe, Brian.
Yes, for sure. We should probably talk a bit more about this fictional show, The Children of Castor.
Yes, we sort of have to, I guess, even though it does look pretty terrible in the clips that we keep being shown.
It's a little bizarre how they've constructed it, isn't it?
Yes. So on the commentary track on the DVD, the writer, Tim Firth, describes The Children of Castor as a sort of blend of The Tomorrow People with some Blake 7 thrown in there, and all done in costumes that look like they've been borrowed from an early 80s Duran Duran video, Brian. But the other thing I notice, of course, is we've mentioned in the last episode how a nuclear explosion has thrown the United States of America off into space. So I suppose we've got to reference Space 1999 and the moon being catapulted out of orbit by a similar accident.
Yeah.
You know, so there are elements of various shows in there. And, of course, we do get references to Doctor Who. And I think quite a touching and charming reference to Jon Pertwee and his performance on a previous cruise. This is about whether or not Andy Van Allen will put on the costume, and David Walliams commenting that Jon Pertwee was so, you know, he was more than happy to put on the costume. And not only that, he would turn up in the bar afterwards and with a few drinking straws and a comedy hat, he did a perfect Wurzel Gummidge as well. So, you know, he embraced it and took part in it, which I think, Brian, that's probably true to the memory of Jon Pertwee.
It is, actually. He was known for putting the costume on at conventions and sort of enjoying the performance of it and having great fun with things. You can find YouTube videos that people have transferred from their old VHS recordings of Jon Pertwee doing convention panels in costume as the Third Doctor.
Splendid stuff. Now, again, in the commentary track, Tim Firth does mention how he went on a cruise and how he spoke to fans who'd be on various fan cruises, including Star Trek cruises. And that's where he got a lot of the material to write this show. So there's a lot of stuff in there. We've mentioned Tomorrow People, Blake 7, Duran Duran, Space 1999, Star Trek and Doctor Who. I'm also just going to mention in passing, there's quite a funny running joke about the sort of the butler who cleans Rob Brydon's room, and the fact that he keeps leaving elaborately folded items of clothing, but also does bits of origami with the toilet paper, which I just wondered if that was a little nod to Blade Runner as well. So lots of stuff, lots of references to science fiction that we've talked about here on the show and to various other bits of the genre.
That may be, or it may be more of a nod to things that are done on some cruise ships where they have these very elaborate things.
Right. Okay. I mean, it is, you know, it's completely aside from everything else we've been talking about, but the chap who plays the butler, I think, does a marvellous turn, and it's a nice little running gag throughout the show.
Yeah, I think there's some satire on, you know, cruise ships and fancy resorts and things going on there.
Absolutely.
This marks the first sort of major pairing as a double act between Brydon and Coogan, who would go on to bigger things and other probably funnier collaborations with A Cock and Bull Story, which was a 2005 film, and then the TV productions, first The Trip in 2010, and then The Trip to Italy in 2014. And it seems that there may be a third trip series on the way as well.
Yes, I believe that's in the pipeline. We may get that this year.
And it's interesting because here in this, we have Rob Brydon playing a version of himself who is much more content with his character and supporting roles rather than Andy Van Allen.
Yes. I mean, if you've seen A Cock and Bull Story or you've watched The Trip, and I certainly do recommend that you watch The Trip because it is, you know, quite hilarious. You'll see that they've done something interesting. Again, you've got Brydon and Coogan sort of playing versions of themselves in a slightly fictionalized way. But particularly in the first series of The Trip, you've got Brydon who's very cheerful. He's very enthusiastic about the whole thing. He's embracing it all. He's quite happy with his sort of his roles as a supporting actor. And it's Steve Coogan who seems to be struggling more with his career in the persona he's playing in The Trip shows.
Yes, it's interesting. While we have Coogan, you know, is sort of desperate to land the American TV role that Nick Lee, you know, in this version, has landed with this Sherlock Holmes in Miami.
Yeah, fascinating. I mean, you know, in Cruise of the Gods, it's Rob Brydon who's on the phone to his agent all the time. And in The Trip, it's Steve Coogan. And he's in talks. He's in talks to film a pilot for some sort of medical examiner role. It's probably not a million miles away from the bits of Sherlock Holmes in Miami that we do get to see.
Interesting.
And I should note for British viewers, you're probably quite familiar with this now if you watch the adverts. But of course, Rob Brydon, we probably see him most often on our screens at the moment because he is now advertising cruises. He does television commercials for a well-known cruise company. So they've obviously had him back on the boat in his dinner jacket, his tuxedo and black tie, looking very much the part, and selling cruises now as opposed to being forced to go on them with a fan club he doesn't really want to interact with.
Oh, very nice. So we should get into some of our own thoughts about Cruise of the Gods. There are certainly things to say here. So, Eamon, what did you like about Cruise of the Gods?
Well, there's a big elephant in the room, which we're going to get to in a moment, Brian, I know. But let's say that the writing is pretty funny. I think it benefits from towards the second half. I think there's much more interesting stuff in the second half of the show. But in terms of the recreation of this terrible TV show, The Children of Castor, the bits we see, the way they've created that sort of 80s look and put Coogan and Brydon in these sort of Duran Duran outfits with these weird weapons, I think all that stuff is marvellous and very well done and delivered. I don't know how you felt about the way that was portrayed.
They did do a convincing job at making it look terrible and making it look like it could come from the from the 80s. In a way, I actually thought that the Sherlock Holmes in Miami recreation we had was funnier and in some ways was better done. Now, that may just be, you know, because of my own biases, but I think there was a certain less is more there. You know, the glimpses we got of Sherlock Holmes in Miami were really quite funny.
Yes, actually, you know, we see a few clips on television and then we actually get to see them filming an episode or part of an episode. And the way they do that is quite hilarious as well, as you say, Brian. the shows within the shows, very well done. And, you know, hats off to the production team all round. And I suppose we have to say hats off to the cast, because it's a very impressive cast we have here. You know, as I say, Rob Brydon, Steve Coogan, David Walliams, James Corden, all sorts of people, you know, other minor roles in there, very well played. Philip Jackson as the writer is very good indeed. So I think the cast and the acting are all very good, Brian.
Yeah, certainly in retrospect, they have, you know, a very, you know, sort of well-known cast of British comedy actors. And yeah, the performances are pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame that Rob Brydon's character he's a bit of a slime ball, really, isn't he? He's a, you know, he's a disgruntled, unhappy man who's not very nice to be with, certainly for the first part of the show. In a way, he gets the harder job. David Walliams is having a whale of a time, I think, playing the fan club president. James Corden, quite subdued, but that's part of the plot, and that will, you know, that will be explained as the show goes on. And then Steve Coogan just appears larger than life and so enthused by it all that he gives the whole production a lift when he appears, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. When it sort of takes a turn when he comes in, and also when they start bringing in a bit more of the character drama aspects, I think it does become much more interesting rather than it standing on the sort of comedic and satirical aspects alone as it does earlier.
Okay. Any other sort of positives about this show you want to get to before I bring up the big question?
Why don't you go on to the question?
Okay. So we've trailed this. You know what's coming. We've talked about it on the Facebook group a little bit today. The big question I have is what I've entitled the Big Bang question, because the same thing is leveled at that very popular American TV show, is this laughing at us or with us? And I think there's probably a case to be made that in the first half of this 90 minutes Cruise of the Gods, it's pretty much laughing at us, I think, Brian.
Yes, I would tend to agree with that. And it, unfortunately, it reminded me of Kinvig. It reminded me of this idea of rolling out the stereotype of the sci-fi fans who are obsessed and have no lives or other interests and are sort of viewed as sort of failures as people, which is sort of unfortunate and doesn't really reflect reality. So I was disappointed in the portrayals that they took there.
Yes, and I would share your disappointment as well for the first half of this show. You know, we've got caricatures of David Walliams, and it's David Walliams, so he's always fun. And, you know, he's playing this very, very geeky president of the fan club with his very, very geeky theories about the bizarre inconsistencies of the Children of Castor, which is fine. But the rest of the fans really get a sort of like, you know, they are very much stereotypes and caricatures. They get very little to do in the first half of the show apart from pester the writer and constantly pestering Andy Van Allen to put on the costume. Fortunately, it gets, as you know, as I've said a few times now, it gets quite an injection of enthusiasm and much more enjoyment of fan culture once Steve Coogan arrives, because he thinks it's all terrific. He's sort of puzzled as to why he wasn't asked himself to be on this fan cruise, and he's more than happy to take part in the fan activities, recreating things, doing photo opportunities, playing with the replica props that the fans have. He takes a big part of it, and he sort of lifts the show, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And they also, as they bring in some of these other elements and, you know, sort of more happens in it, and I'm not going to get into all of the details, but there are, you know, some more significant things that happen aboard the cruise. and we get some sort of real human moments and some human drama in there. And I think that is much more satisfying than a lot of the comedy and satire in this.
Yes, some of the fan club get their moments. We get to learn a bit more about them as humans. And it does save this show, I think, from being completely unkind to them. So, yes, the second half of the show, as you say, Brian, we're not really going to spoil it because there's a big plot point which is revealed, which changes, well, just about everything, I think, doesn't it? And gives a sort of different feel to the second half of the show. But yeah, Steve Coogan's arrival, thank goodness. And thank goodness he was so enthusiastic about it and seems to be having a whale of a time playing this sort of American TV star who's embracing a 1980s show that he made when he was a youngster.
Yeah, and you know, some of the things they did in the second half were sort of an improvement of how they were treating and viewing the fans, and others sort of discarded that a bit and were still not ideal from that perspective. But they did do some fun things with it and some nice stuff towards the conclusion in the sort of dramatic tone and in using the fan setting.
I must say, I've mentioned the running gag about the sort of the cruise boat valet and the things he does to Rob Brydon's room in sort of very short time, or the little sort of elaborately folded things he leaves behind. There's another quite good running gag that's used a couple of times, which is whenever they pose for a photo opportunity, Steve Coogan somehow manages to obscure Rob Brydon's face in whenever they're taking photos, either by holding up one of these elaborate strato bows or whatever, or just by putting his hand in front of his face. And I quite like that one as well.
Yes, of course, they managed to work that in. One comparison that I think we can't go without mentioning is Galaxy Quest.
Ah, good one.
Because this was only a couple years after Galaxy Quest came out. And I don't know if this was written before it was out. It's quite possible that it was. But it does something quite similar in that you have the characters who are actors from a science fiction show interacting with their fans and then interacting in a way that is put upon them, that they feel they have to. And I think in many ways, for me, Galaxy Quest got it right and Cruise of the Gods did not.
Yes.
And that is partly because of the portrayal of the fans, and partly because some of the fans in Galaxy Quest are given the chance to say that, you know, yes, there are other things, this is just an interest. And they don't really get that in here. And this leans on the stereotypes more so, unfortunately.
Yes, it does. And you're quite right. Galaxy Quest is the superior article. It is a fabulous film, which you can watch over and over again. Of course, it's got marvellous performances in it by people like Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, and the late, great Alan Rickman, who one of his funniest ever roles, I think, in Galaxy Quest. But yeah, it was slightly kinder and more realistic about fan culture than Cruise of the Gods. Interesting comparison, actually, Brian.
Yeah, and I have to say for me, while in Galaxy Quest, I thought the humor, the parody, the satire, it all worked very well for me. In Cruise of the Gods, a lot of the comedy didn't really work for me. It was that style that some of this particular team of performers and writers leaned to, a sort of acerbic and somewhat nasty style that doesn't appeal as much to me. I often don't find it particularly funny. So for me, Cruise of the Gods was not as funny as it should have been.
Okay, So, yes, it is set up as a comedy, and perhaps they didn't quite hit the mark as often as they should have done. Otherwise, perhaps it would be a better-known show and might get mentioned in the same breath as Galaxy Quest. But there you go. I guess we're moving towards our recommendations on this and on whether or not you can get hold of the DVD or the Amazon Instant purchase, depending on what part of the world you're in. So I guess it's time to say, should our listeners track this one down, Brian?
Well, for me, it has to be a no. It's okay, but I didn't find it all that funny. And I found some of the fan portrayals to be more sort of stereotypical and nasty and not particularly enjoyable. So I will not recommend this one.
Okay. It's a game of two halves for me here in the UK. The first half of the film, first 45 minutes, it's pretty unkind stuff, I think, personally. But as I've said several times, the arrival of Steve Coogan, plus the plot point, which we're not really allowed to discuss because it is a big spoiler, changes the second half and makes it actually something much more worth watching. It's perhaps interesting to look at it as the start of this sort of Bryden and Coogan double act, which they've gone on to explore in probably much better films or better productions than Cruise of the Gods. So for $1.89 on Amazon Instant, it might be worth a punt for the 90 minutes, but I wouldn't pay any more than that for it myself. I've now watched it twice, and I don't think I'll ever be watching it again, but I will be watching Galaxy Quest again at some point. So it's a strange recommendation from both of us. It's a definite thumbs down from you, Brian. And from me, I'm sort of suggesting that you might want to spend your money on The Trip with Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan instead.
Okay. So, in summary, Cruise of the Gods introduced us to a fictional television series from the 1980s called The Children of Castor that has become a cult classic with fans who are rather obsessed with it and going into all sorts of details and so on. And they are running this cruise with guests from the original show. And we get into this story with first one of the actors who was a major character, and then two of the actors who were major characters in The Children of Castor, dealing with their current situation, where one is very disappointed with a career that did not work out and is struggling with that, and the other has a career that did work out and is doing very well, and we get the interactions between the two of them, and we also get something of a human drama type story between those characters along with some of the fans on board this cruise, all as part of a sort of parody and satirical show that is really built as a comedy.
Okay, interesting. And if you know, you've seen the show and you think we've got it wrong, if it is one that you'd watch regularly, or if you want to discuss its portrayal of the fans, please do come along to the Facebook group and let us know what you think. And of course, please come back next time when we are talking about a Channel 4 show called Dead Set, and it's time for zombies again, Brian. The second eruption of zombies I think we've had on British Invaders. Charlie Brooker's zombie drama, bit of reality television from Channel 4 in 2008.
Yes, absolutely. Before Charlie Brooker was doing Black Mirror, this was one of the things that he was working on. So it'll be an interesting one to take a look at for sure.
Yes, absolutely. So there will be some talk about Black Mirror as well.
Until then, you can find us and find all of our episodes on BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group and you can join in with the conversation and feel free to post and comment. We always have some fun stuff going on there.
Absolutely. Join the fun there. And also join British Invaders as part of the Voice of Geeks Network. Check out all of their shows and other comings and goings on at vognetwork.com. Join in the fun in all the various internet places.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, absolutely. And as somebody who was in Leicester in 1982, it's Eamon in England saying, purity!